It's easy to get lost. This is The Revenue Maze, and I'm Valerie Cobb. Join me as we navigate the halls, dead ends, and U-turns on your path towards upward growth trajectory. The Revenue Maze is sponsored by Revenue North Star, guidance and execution through fractional revenue leadership, uncovering hidden revenues, and empowering small business growth through process-driven sales customized to your company environment.
Welcome, everybody, to another great episode of The Revenue Maze. I'm so excited for this guest. I always say that, I know, but I'm excited about all guests because they're just amazing humans, and I think this is going to be so much fun. One of the things that sets this human apart is, just because I'm in awe of anybody who is excellent at math, I feel at times when somebody can pass at 100% standardized test the first time in math, I am just like in awe. Secondly, he has some interesting things about being on a team from Kenya about Frisbee and beaches, and you'll see that from his shirt today. And also, he has some really interesting things to tell us about getting out of the revenue maze. And so I welcome Mike Malloy from Malloy Industries. He's the founder of Malloy Industries. Welcome, Mike.
Hi, thank you so much for welcoming me today. I'm excited to join you here on the Revenue Maze podcast. And you did allude a little bit to some international beach frisbee travels. So earlier in my career, I was the CEO of Waveborne Sunglasses, and I was a traveling sunglasses salesman and beach ultimate frisbee player, and actually ended up competing with Team Kenya at the World Championships of Beach Ultimate Frisbee in Dubai in 2015. And that was kind of a peak of my athletic career, as well as, Waveborne was actually a sponsor for the tournament, and I was able to play frisbee for an hour on the beach and then go sell sunglasses for an hour or two and go play another game. I mean, it was pretty amazing. And just, one part of my journey as an entrepreneur.
To me, it was just so fun to hear that fact, because I was like, okay, I don't know that I've ever met anybody who was a beach frisbee player other than to just play. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a world championship. So it's really a fun story. I'm super glad that you'll be able to weave some of that fun kind of story.
We're going to have a lot of fun today. If you can't talk about the Hawaiian shirt and, the amount of dad jokes I may slip in here throughout, as we talk. It's funny actually. So I have a 1.5-year-old son, and he asked me last week. He was like, "Dad, can you tell me more about solar eclipses?" And I looked at him and I said, "No, son."
So to that bum. I think that's fabulous, and you will hear his son a little bit maybe from time to time. The reality is, these shows are unscripted. We love what is the humanizing element of business, right? Because we all have our personal lives, and they are what shape us and motivate us and everything else. So I just love it. And many may or may not know this, but I tell people this all the time. I have 41 nieces and nephews, and I have 46 grandnieces and nephews. So, I have this massive family. So hearing chaos and it's not the big fat Greek wedding, but it gets very, very close to that kind of chaos sometimes when we all get together, but super fun to have.
I love it. My sister has 6 kids as well. So, I've got some good uncle practice, and my son is officially our chief cuteness officer here.
Cuteness officer.
He does his job very, very well.
All right. Well, I love it. We're going to hear a lot more about that. We always kind of start the premise with helping people get in or get out, not in the revenue maze, get out of the revenue maze. So Mike, you're next. No,
they're already there. Yeah.
What give us a tip. What would be one thing?
Absolutely. So one big tip that I would encourage folks to think about to get out of the revenue maze is to develop what I call a valuable trust building gift. And it's something that you can give to people that are potential prospects and eventual customers to add value on the front end. And, you know, some people might call it like a lead magnet, or, hey, I'm trying to capture email address and I want to, you know, start marketing to you and send you all these drip campaigns. And then you're going to, but what if you reframe the way you're thinking about it? I'm like, how can I add a bunch of value to them before they pay me any money? Because ultimately, if people are going to work with you, they need to know you, they need to like you, and they need to trust you. And so that's also why we call it a trust building gift. Is if you're giving someone a gift, and this could be, you know, we have several of them here at Moolah Industries that we use as, you know, we serve a lot of B2B SaaS CEOs. So what are the things that they need along the way? It could be meeting agenda templates. It could be a playbook for how to solve a specific problem in a certain function of the business. A lot of times what I'll actually do is I love to read, or at this point, listen to audiobooks, and there's, you know, nonfiction business books. And then I'll create a worksheet with some exercise and some questions to answer about my own business based on what was in the book. And then I'll actually turn that into a template with fill in the blanks, or, hey, here's, you know, a 2 or 3 page Google Doc. Can you, you know, audit your marketing and your brand messaging to figure out, you know, what you're saying at different stages of how people interact with you? And then we'll give that away for free. And not only do we give it away, we also share the example of how we used it with our business. Because oftentimes when you're, you know, auditing or looking at your own business, you're not exactly sure how to fill out maybe a worksheet. So we find those examples are helpful. And again, our goal is to give these as gifts. So it's, you know, I'm in a meeting with somebody and they say, oh, you know, I need help with, oh, we just hired 2 new people into onboarding help. Well, I have a whole onboarding plan for new team members that we use internally that I've given to probably over 100 companies at this point to help them when they're bringing on new team members. I don't sell onboarding services. Like, that's not our business model at all, but it's stuff that I know is going to help you. And if I help you and you use it, you're like, oh man, that was Mike really helped with that. Mike said he's got like a bunch of stuff he could help with. Like, you know, maybe I should send him an email or give him a call. And again, this is primarily, it's all on the front end. You know, you're doing this, you know, not because somebody's paying you $10,000 a month and okay, yeah, here you can have this thing. It's, oh, I just met you. You need help with that? Yeah. Let me, you know, let me give you one of our gifts and we'll send it over. Take a look for a week. If you want to go over it together, we can hop on Zoom and, you know, talk through it to add value. It's all coming back to how do we add that value and kind of be relentlessly generous. It's one of our core values here.
I love that. Relentlessly generous and a gift. I was just on a networking event and someone was saying, literally, I don't know how to prospect because I don't want it to be spammy. And the first thing I thought was, okay, Catherine Brown, how good humans sell, right? Because one of the things that happens is non-sales roles feel like sales is a bad four-letter word. It's sleazy and cheesy, which is so strange because by definition, it is, as you said, a gift. But it is solving a need and a challenge if you're doing it properly. If you're spamming and have all the head trash and you're just feature benefit vomiting at people, yeah, you're spamming them. You're not helping. You're not giving them a gift. But if you're passionate about the gift, and then loved about what you said with the gift is, you know, it's kind of a pay it forward. I'm not in the business of onboarding. I'm just trying to help you, you know, and I really like that. That's fabulous advice. So give us some real world.
Absolutely. And
when it has worked, you said 100 or so that you had done onboarding. And so,
yeah. So, well, and let me riff on one other thing you said there too, where, you know, people don't like, oh, I don't want to be salesy. I don't want to feel like, you know, I'm trying to, you know, be a used car salesman. Then don't, like, be your authentic self, show up as a real human. Like, I'm a dad who lives at the beach, likes Hawaiian shirts and tells a bunch of jokes. I'm also, you know, pretty smart and have some great people I work with who can help you. But what I think is so useful and important to remember is if you believe so much in your product or service that you'd be doing a disservice to this person if they didn't buy from you, if they didn't start using your software, you know, then it's you're like required to sell them to make sure that they go home with it. And something I learned from Zig Ziglar a long time ago, he's taught me a lot from some of his old tapes, you know, that it's, again, a disservice. Like, you want their life to be better. You want to solve their problem. They're problem aware. You can make them solution aware. I'll often use the PASTO framework where, you know, it's problem, accentuate the problem, solution, transformation, and then you offer your thing at the end. When you talk about the solution, it's not, hey, here's my solution, buy it right away. It's like, oh, like you got this really bad problem, like, you know, your revenue's stuck and you need help with this. But wouldn't it be great if like somebody who had like decades of experience could come in and help audit your existing sales process and then actually rewrite your sales scripts and train your SDRs and account execs and kind of oversee it. So you could go run a different part of the business. Like, what would you do with all that time? Like, wouldn't you be transformed, you know, with saving 5 to 10 to 20 hours a week so you didn't have to be in the sales race? And they're like, yeah, that would be great. I was like, well, as a matter of fact, Molloy Industries happens to have a roster of 200 fractional executives who could help with that. But we start by, and I kind of skip the problem step of, you know, what are the struggles? And, you know, they're not meeting their monthly or quarterly sales projections. They don't know why it's not working. They've got, you know, a lot of top of the lead funnels, but they're not converting through. And just to kind of help people. Well, and here's a great question. Let me do this. Do you know what time it is?
I actually do.
So what I love that you didn't say it because we're recording, but what I saw your eyes do was look at the clock. You looked at the clock. And so what's important, and this is one thing that can help you get out of the revenue maze, is to learn how to ask questions that direct the person you're talking to the problem, the pain point that you solve. In this case, it was just the clock, but like asking questions that have them think about the thing that they're struggling with. So you're ultimately kind of priming and pre-phrasing their brain to want to look for a solution to it, because they're now in this moment problem aware. And if they're not at all thinking of the problem you solve, then they're not probably going to be that interested in the solution you might have to offer.
Yeah. In the world of revenue, sales teams is part of that function, right? You know, absolutely. We always say lead to the solving, not with the solving, because people tune out, right? I use an analogy, and I don't, and sometimes it's religious based. So I just say, someone comes to your door, knocks on your door and says, I've got this, do you want to buy? And if you go back to even the Golden Circle, it wasn't actually Simon Sinek who started that, but he is very famous for it, right? So we say, you know, the why to the how to the what, right? And when you're saying, but if you start with, and you'll know this as your son gets older, children are great for teaching sales lessons, actually.
Oh, I love it.
But you just literally say, okay, a child, if you just say to them, don't put your finger in that light socket, they're going to just go, bing, and I don't care.
I said
care.
That earlier today, by the way.
Right. If you literally start with something that connects and ask them questions, what happens if you put your hand in that light socket? What happens if you do this? We used to always say to our kids, we don't say no, we say, I don't think so, because that was so hard for them to say. And, you know, if you didn't ever say the word no, it was hard for them, right? So it got them thinking. And everything we learn, you know, it's like with teenagers, it's like, oh my goodness. If you say, how was your day at school? They'll go, fine. Right? That's it. Or not good. And they walk away, you know? And you're like, and so what is how questions are huge. Right.
I love it. And for the teenagers, I love asking, who did you help today? And what did you learn? Doesn't always work, but what did you love today? What was one exciting thing? It doesn't have to be, oh, in math class, this really, like, it could be, you know, oh, I found out Jimmy's dating Sarah, you know, okay, cool. Yeah. You know, but at least it gets the conversation going and you're able to kind of move forward there.
And then it lets you also, as uncovering certain underappreciated things, lets you know if you're going to be a good human when you're selling, then honestly and truthfully, if you find out they don't have a need, just refer or just be kind or just don't try to continue to sell. Just go, okay, I know so-and-so, you know, and I'm happy to refer because I now know that you have this issue, not something I can solve, but somebody else can solve, and off you go. And then you don't have that spam feeling. You don't have that, like, I got to go take a shower.
It's more like I made a new friend, and it's not a new customer, but I made a new friend. And I've also found too, that like in every meeting, I'm always thinking what resources or what valuable trust building gifts can I share with them afterwards? And who do I know that they should know? And sometimes like when I understand their business more, even before you hire me, I may have a great sales prospect for you. I know who your ideal client is, this person who you need this thing. Okay, great. You know, let me make an introduction over there. Can you send me a little blurb? I'll, you know, tee up that intro for you. And that's so much of what I do as kind of being a super connector and finding ways to just make mutually beneficial connections. You know, and when people refer you, and if one of the ways you're trying to get out of the revenue maze is through referrals, like, you have to do a good job because they're using their social political capital to say, hey, you know, Joe, I think you should meet Mike because he can probably help you with it. If you don't think Mike's going to do a good job, you're not going to make that intro, you know? And so having that reputation and kind of what your personal brand is, as well as the organizational brand, but it's also you as a human being, like, are they going to handle this well? Can I trust they're not going to, you know, rip you off or make a bad deal for the person? Then you're more likely to get those referrals just out of the goodwill of, hey, people are thinking about you. And I also think of these valuable trust building gifts as ways to put like deposits in the relationship bank. You know, you're not selling anything when you're like, hey, you know, I have this tool based on what we said, you know, I thought you might like it. Or sometimes it's, I'll email people I haven't talked to in a while, and it's a way to become top of mind, remind them we exist, not sell anything, add value. And then maybe they need me, or maybe they know somebody who's like, oh yeah, I just got an email from Mike a couple days ago. You know, he had this great thing on, you know, how to audit your brand messaging. Like, let me send it to you, and happy to make an intro if you think you need help from him.
So you touched on, and I'm going to try to summarize as much. You touched on and unpacked some really valuable nuggets there in like a very summarized format. So I'm probably going to miss some of the essence, but we're in AI driven arena right now, right? And lead gen or prospecting or whatever, what is really going on is trust. And we all know in sales stats, 1 to 4 to 1 to 5 referrals will close in new business, where if you're Jed Blounting it and saying that it takes 20 to 50 touch points to warm a prospect, right? That's a lot in digital noise space. And it's true. It's a lot in the digital noise space. So that's just to warm. Then you've got maybe an SDR, depend on your structure of your sales team and what you're selling, right? Etc. That then you've got to get so many meetings to then get so many appointments to then get so many qualified quotes going out the door.
Can I give one piece of advice right there though? When you get that first meeting, the goal of every single meeting is to get the next meeting. And the way you achieve that goal at a higher percentage of the time is to save the last 2 to 5 minutes of the meeting to book a meeting from a meeting. Bam, fam. I call it bam, fam. We do it all the time. If I'm in a meeting with somebody I know I want to meet again, let's not email back and forth 7 times or like, oh, I'll send you my Calendly link. Like, maybe you find it, but maybe you never click the thing. And then I got to send you 7 emails to be like, hey, are you still interested? Just say, hey, how does next Tuesday, like I had a meeting this morning. I already booked something next Tuesday at 4. It's the only slot I had open, but I was like, hey, it's 4 o'clock. All right, let's do that. And the invite's already on the calendar. And that keeps so much momentum going. The other thing that I would encourage is when you're in sales meetings with one decision maker, I just always ask, you know, who else is involved in the decision-making process? Or like, you know, the last time you bought a product or service like this, what was the buying process? I just want to understand. And what you really want to understand is like, okay, how many hoops do I have to jump through to get to the person with the checkbook who's going to pay the invoice and sign the contract and that sort of stuff? What you're also trying to do is get a meeting with every single person involved in the decision-making. And so you may have a great champion, the person you meet with absolutely loves you, but maybe they don't have a lot of political capital within their own organization and they don't really want to stand up in a staff meeting or a meeting with their boss that they're going to talk about 20 different things and be like, let me make a compelling case for why you should, you know, pay this guy a bunch of money. But if they can at least make a compelling case of, let me make sure you know why we should meet with this guy so that you can learn more. And then you have the opportunity kind of firsthand, as opposed to a lot of times it's like a kindergarten game of telephone where like you whisper the sentence in and by the third, fourth person, it's not exactly what you're saying and they don't quite get the, you know, impact. And it's also hard for those internal champions to overcome all of the objections or the obstacles that other people in the company may have. Sometimes there's like a saboteur. Sometimes it's like the IT department. They're like, oh, I could do that. Like, why don't you just pay me more and I'll code a thing that will, you know, do that software as a service. I'm like, no, like, okay, but like, let's talk about, you know, why this commercial off the shelf thing is actually easier. It already integrates. You're going to save all these development hours. They can focus on other things. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. And it starts with you as a salesperson trying to get into the room and into the Zoom room. I'm not even saying you got to show up in person. It's just, hey, how's your calendar look for a 15, 25 minute meeting? You know, so we can talk through it and go from there.
Yeah. And that's wonderful sales process. I guess what I was rewinding to was the credibility piece of how hard it is to sift through the trust noise of AI at this moment. And then, yes, the process to follow up and make sure that you've got it on the calendar because, oh, my gosh, yeah. And we all know that in a consensus buy can take 256 touch points if you don't get those decision makers on. So you're mathematically inclined better than I am. But what I guess I was trying to add and reinforce to what you said, which was really that genuineness and that not a lead magnet or whatever you want to call it, but in the space of how many touch points just to get a sale across the finish line, if you can have your 1 in 4 referrals close, why does 1 in 4 referrals close over the 20 to 50 marketing touch points, then to warm it up, then to get to that point, then to get a salesman? And to cut through that, it is exactly what you said. AI has bred mistrust. Mm-hmm. And mistrust is because of the fact that we don't know who programmed the AI. We don't know exactly what the AI was taught to do, whatever that is. There's mistrust there. I don't really care what that is.
Yeah.
In what you're saying, when you talk about even just know, like, and trust or whatever, those close faster because the mistrust equation has been taken out by the referral, right? Yeah. And I don't care with AI or anything else. It's digital, it's in the ether, it's something, and I've got to go research and I've got to figure out what it is and whether I trust it. And if you're working through paying it forward, that creates that genuine sort of situation that breeds real and honest to goodness trust, because that person then feels like they're a human, which they should be anyways, right?
Yeah.
They shouldn't be treating anybody as a number, but they also then feel like you genuinely care, because you're not after the dollar, the almighty dollar. You're after solving a need and a challenge.
And a relationship, and like a long-term relationship. You're playing an infinite game where it's not, how do I make a quick buck or meet my, you know, oh, it's, you know, September 25th, I got to hit my sales quota. Let me, you know, make a urgency scarcity made up offer to, you know, make sure my button. No, like that's not at all what you want to be doing. You know, if it's going to take them an extra month, it's going to take an extra 6 months, that's fine. You're patient. You're there when they need them. You check in every once in a while. And I think in building that trust, it goes hand in hand with a lot of Brené Brown's teachings about being vulnerable. And the more that in your interactions with people, you can share a little bit on the personal side. And, you know, and oftentimes as I talk through kind of my story, I will share some, you know, things that have gone on in my family. And part of this business that I've now built today came out of the loss of my mom, you know, and she passed away a couple years ago, and she had her birthday beginning of October. And, you know, I took a month off in September of 21 and was with family and grieved. And as I went back to work, I realized I made $0 that month. Because all of it at that time was Mike's billable hours. And if I didn't work, I didn't make money. And I also found out that at that time, my wife was pregnant with our chief cuteness officer, who is about 1.5 now. And I realized, like, I wanted to take paternity leave. I wanted to be there for the birth and not be like, oh, I got to do all these things. Like, how are we going to pay the bills? And so that led us down this path of building kind of a fractional executive matchmaking business where, you know, we have all of these experts, these people. And at first I thought it'd be, you know, 10, 20 of my buddies, like, hey, let's do some part-time projects, great resignation. It has grown way, way, way bigger than that with all of these experts and other kind of small businesses that are service providers that can help across different business functions. You know, we're primarily doing B2B SaaS sales. We're helping in that arena, but we also have, you know, experts in operations or in technology or executive coaching for some of the C-suite folks who haven't developed those skills. And, you know, I have found that one of the fastest ways to build trust with people is to share a vulnerable story and to be yourself, not to be like perfectly polished. I've got my suit and tie on and like, let's just talk business. And I don't care. Like, nah, man, spend the first 5 minutes. I learned this from the book, The Trillion Dollar Coach. You start every meeting with a trip report. Tell me about your trip. Like, what's, you know, one thing exciting or fun that's happened in the past week or two? It doesn't have to be work related. Let's like connect on that level. And then I do a lot of coaching with entrepreneurs as well. We'll check in right after that. How are you doing 1 through 10 personally? How are you doing 1 through 10 professionally? And what's one thing you're grateful for? And what I love about those 1 through 10s is there's no 7. You can't have 7's a cop out. So you have to clearly be a 6 or clearly be an 8. And there's a difference when you decide, oh, well, I'm a 6. All right, let's talk about why you're a 6 and not an 8 or a 9. And, you know, again, this works really well with like internal teams and direct reports and making that interpersonal connection, because then people will share more. They'll be an open book. They'll be transparent. They're happy to, you know, share more information on the business side about, you know, and this goes into now where if you're in a prospect qualifying call, like when you have that rapport and they trust you, they'll tell you what their sales goals were and where they're doing on it. And, you know, I think, you know, we have issues in the funnel here because, you know, this conversion rate is a lot lower than we thought it would be. And, but if they don't trust you, they're not going to be very forthcoming with that information. They're not going to, you know, want to go to bat for you when you're not in the room and they're having their internal meetings evaluating you against your competitors.
And that's amazing. And so I think some of the things that you've been discussing just conjure to mind. First of all, why are you likable? And really, when we talk about why are you likable, I mean, Mike, you're likable out of the gate, because you immediately connect with people at a human level versus a starch level, I would say, a starch level. And the reality is people buy from people they like, for sure.
All things being equal, they buy from people they like. All things being unequal, they still buy from people they like. Like they'll pay more money to somebody they like rather than, you know, a stranger on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. And even if they've decided, what is it, 57, 67, 77, I don't know what it's up to, all the way through researching, a lot of times they, even if they've been researching, the reality is they're in the buying moment, but they sometimes don't even know what they're really fundamentally trying to solve. I work as a fractional CRO for a cyber risk transference company right now, and I'm speaking at an AppTech conference for DOD, you know, subcontractors, and doing, it's a lot of jargon, but CMMC, preparedness for the regulatory and everything. And a lot of what they think is needed isn't needed. So they're thinking this requirement is so difficult, and they're just going, as manufacturers, we're just going to not do it, and we're just not going to work for the government. Sometimes they don't think in terms of, well, wait, we might be going into a recession, or we're already in the commodity zone as a machine shop. Let's just use that as, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, you got a Deloitte stat saying, hey, let's tell everybody that the big contractors are going, the primes are going to go and outsource supply chain by 35%. So there's 35% market share sitting there to grab, right? So they're thinking so much, oh, getting ready through the government regulation is going to be a lot of work. But guess what, folks? It's a lot of work anyway, right? To get prospects, to get everything else, right? And then you start to say, okay, you've underappreciated something. I just use that as an example. I've been in a gazillion industries. Yeah. But the reality is then it's a cost center, and oh, it costs too much. And it's like, oh, wait. But you can't not do this, or it's going to cost you 100%. You know what I mean? It's like you're going to lose out on something that could happen. And I think that then goes back to what you were saying, even with the trust and connecting and buying from people that they like, because when you go in and you immediately connect with a prospect, they're most likely going to hear that message through what and how questions, which is serving them, because you're not the one talking the whole time. right? It's a service, right? It is literally, we're talking about that because people want you to genuinely feel, they want to think and feel that you are invested in them as a human, not the other way around. So if you come in and you're just like, I'm the CEO and I've had 25 years experience and I'm like, you should be listening to me. Immediately they're like, what?
They just glaze over. Yeah.
Glaze over. And you don't do that. You're amazing. You get in and you're like, we're going to have a good time and we're going to wear my Hawaiian shirt.
And we're going to tell jokes. And so let me ask you this important question. What do you call birds that stick together?
Oh my gosh, you're going to make me be funny and I'm not.
That's all right. I'll tell the being funny part because the birds that stick together, they're called Velcros.
Oh.
And before the crowbar was invented, they used to just drink at home. And this is the key. I mean, this is my personal brand too, but the idea that if somebody laughs, if somebody is having a good time, it's going to be a good meeting. And Dan Pink, he's read a lot of good books, one of which is called When, a lot about the timing of things. And people typically remember at the very beginning, the halftime, the middle, and the end. And so one of our core values at Mobile Industries is to be enthusiastically fun, which means I tell one dad joke or more in every single meeting. And I'll often kick it off with it. And if I didn't kick it off, I will always close with it because I want that smile. They're like, oh, that was really good. And sometimes I'll even, like, at the end of the meeting, I'll tell the joke. I know it's funny. They start laughing. And I just end the Zoom right away. I'm like, drop the mic. Like, we're done. I got the laugh. Let's, you know, ride that wave off into the sunset. And I have found that, you know, that makes people, you know, when they see your name and they see an email from you, a calendar invite, whatever it is, you know, do they perk up? Are they smiling? Are they like, oh, this is going to be a positive interaction because their brain associates it with the previous interactions with you? Or are they like, oh, that was such a sleazy sales call. I was with that guy, you know, last week. Like, let me just archive it. I don't want to, you know, talk to him. And so being thoughtful about how you craft the flow of a meeting. And that's also why I like to start with the trip reports and like to talk about positive things that have been happening recently. Not like, what was the worst thing that happened last week? What was the best thing? You know, or what are you looking forward to? What are you excited about for, you know, the holiday season or whatever it might be? I also love in networking sessions to ask people, my first question always, what do you spend most of your time on? And let them go personal or professional. And whatever it is, they're probably excited about it. It's what they enjoy, you know, spending their time on. So when you can ask questions and an ideal ratio, like in any conversation, if the other person talks 70% of the time, they're going to think it was a great conversation. People love talking about themselves. And that's great because I love learning about people and I love understanding and being able to unpack and, you know, do some pattern matching and think about resources or people I can connect them with. And so getting really good at question asking and like actively listening. So it's not just I have the script and I'm going to ask the next question. Like I do have a script. I do have a plan, but I'll bounce around and I'll skip some if it doesn't make sense in the flow, you know, and based on what they just said, you know, how can you mirror it and kind of play it back to them? And if necessary, like validate, oh, that is really hard. Like you must feel, you know, really stressed that you're not hitting your sales quotas. And, you know, I know how hard it's been. Like I've been a quota carrying salesman for many years. I was a traveling sunglasses salesman for half of my 20s. And, you know, a lot of what I'm sharing here and now I built this, I learned through Automobile University, like listening to those tapes and those audiobooks with Zig Ziglar and everybody else. As I was literally driving a white van full of sunglasses from like surf shop to surf shop along the coast. So, you know, it's helpful. And I'm trying to share just like some ways to build that rapport and the connection with these people as it all comes back to liking and trusting and like, you know, wanting to do business with people you like. Well, also, there's another great book by Vanessa Van Edwards called Cues. Which is all about warmth cues and competence cues. And so, you know, the family things, talking about the kids, the jokes, like that's all warmth. And it's, you know, people like you, but if you're just really warm, but they don't think you're competent, that you're kind of a pushover, they're probably not going to hire you for an expert specialist role. But if you're just really competent, you're always in the data and let me, you know, talk about my math SAT scores and all my computer science degrees and things, you know, but I'm kind of a jerk, you know, or very aloof and standoffish. We're like, well, that doesn't really sound, you know, like somebody I necessarily want to work with. But what's awesome is when they converge, you get to charisma. Charismatic people are both warm and competent. And so identifying ways both in your verbal and nonverbal communication. And 10 out of 10 would recommend this book. It's a masterclass in the actions you can take. They also have like scripts of words, like, you know, use specific words for people who need the confidence, use other words for people who need the warmth, like how you even sign off an email. You know, how many I'm a big exclamation point guy. I'm a big smiley face guy. I'll drop the pictures of my son into emails from time to time with, you know, we were at the grocery store the other day. He's cheesing, eating a big piece of cheese, sitting in the front of the grocery car. Like, that's not really relevant to, you know, what it is I'm talking about in this email, but it's an opportunity to like give people a glimpse into what your life is. You know, what are you doing outside of work? As we are whole human beings, we're not just cogs in a machine trying to, you know, capitalistically do whatever. We're trying to live great lives and we're trying to enjoy life. And often family is what it's all about. So I think that's a big thing that I would recommend people, you know, bring your whole self to your meetings and to the work you're doing and have fun along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have much to add to that because I just say amen. I agree. I agree 100%. Why reiterate the obvious with it? I always laugh a little bit because I have a very dry sense of humor, and there are times when I can come off austere because of it. And so what I would caution people who are listening, Mike is, that's his persona, that's what he is. You will need to tap into whatever yours is. I love Chris Voss, and he talks about the FMDJ voice, but not everybody has an FMDJ voice.
I don't. I tried to do it and talk in that late night, but like that. Yeah. I love that. And I will also throw out there that we have on our website, on our homepage, 100 flashcards with dad jokes on them. So if you need material, I encourage you to go there. None of it is copyrighted. These are all, you know, corny little things. Like, what did the digital alarm clock say to his mom? He said, look, Ma, no hands.
No hands. Yeah. And it's so funny because you can do that. I when I was working in heavy equipment, they'd have all hands in, and, you know, the manufacturing, it could be some tough and rumble kind of group. Right. And so we always said it had to be a dumb dad joke because it has to be completely non-offensive. And they're always non-offensive. They're just very neutral.
They're silly. It's a play on words. Yeah.
Yeah. And the humor helped, especially if a company is having some difficulties, the humor helps them feel like you can solve the impossible. Because that's what we say. You've shared a few things, but we solve the impossible, or we make the impossible probable, because a lot of times when you make the impossible probable, what they're thinking is, we can't solve this issue. It's unsolvable. The recession has hit. We did it. You know, we saw that through COVID, and then it was like, well, let's ideate. What can we do? Can we say yes and, or do we have to say no, but, you know, stuff like that, right?
Totally. And you're like,
what can you do? Because I'm a big sci-fi geek, and back in the day of the early Star Trek and everything, we all have so many things that are in play from those impossible, what we saw as children, impossible but magical ways to do things, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was like, well, now you have these engineers that are working on food replication and working on all different ways of transportation and things that just blow the mind. And those were all impossible, right?
Totally. And Valerie, the future, it's already here. It's just not evenly distributed. You know, there are people doing amazing things that I can't even imagine. And with AI and, you know, self-driving car, all of, like, it's here. But there's also people, you know, in other countries who, like, don't even have the internet, you know, or don't have a smartphone. Yeah. And every time I learn about a new tool, I'm like, oh, that's amazing. You know, but like other people have been using that for years. I just discovered Hotjar.com last week, which is like a plugin for your website that records it. It gives you the heat maps. And like, it's amazing. I got a data strategy guy working on it to, you know, give us some recommendations. All right, how can we improve these things? But there's people who've had that for years on their website and have been, you know, making it better as a result of it. So other piece of advice I would have for folks, too, as we think about those like valuable trust building gifts, it's really, as you find valuable things on the internet, save them somewhere. Like, put them in a, I have a Notion database that I keep them all in. You can put them in a spreadsheet. I had them in Airtable for a while. You can put them in a note on your phone. Maybe that's not the best place, because ultimately, I guess a Dropbox folder, a Google Drive folder, like, just be like, hey, this is useful. I'm going to save it for later. And then when you're talking to somebody who could benefit from the thing, you say, oh, I got a thing. Let me send it to you. And I would consider myself a hoarder at this point of like valuable resources and PDFs and guides and templates and toolkits. And I'm like, well, I may not need it right now, but I might need it later. I might meet somebody who needs it and I want to be able to help them. And, I teach as an adjunct at Georgetown, and I have this startup internship seminar course where I basically teach students how to not suck as an intern. And it's like, it's all of the foundational professional skills that an 18 to 22 year old has never learned in a classroom about how to send emails, how to sign an email, how to set up a meeting agenda, to take notes, to follow up with action items afterwards, to book a meeting from a meeting. I even have students like call my cell phone and leave a voicemail. Oh, it's funny. I just did this. So I would do this. This is how I would do a phone. But the kids these days, this is how they do a phone when they make a phone call.
Yeah,
it's an iPhone. But I have students who've never left a voicemail before. And so I'm always on the lookout for like, what are the like level one skills I give to my students? And then you have the intermediate, you have the advanced stuff as people kind of level up in their professional careers. And I just encourage people to like keep an eye out so that, you know, every once in a while, hey, saw this article, thought of you. Those emails are a great way to build relationships, because I'm trying to encourage the relationship piece here, not the how to meet your sales quota. But you build enough relationships, people are going to want to help you. And another Zig Ziglar quote, you can have everything you want in life if you just help enough other people get what they want.
Yes, I love old Zig. I quote him left and right. And people, he's one of the most misunderstood, but he's really foundational on so many things. It's amazing. He had amazing gift and was an amazing person. At the end of the day, you said something that just blew my mind, Mike, because it's one of those analogies where you said, hey, in other countries, they don't even have internet. But we have a generation that of gamers that maybe haven't even been out of their basement, and now they're interns. So they don't even know how to present on a telephone. Something that you wouldn't even think of. It's like a dog command in my generation to be able to talk on the telephone. But if all you
or even the like the hi who just joined, like, you know, I used to do conference calls. Hi, who just joined? Great, we're gonna get started in a minute. Like, I used to run I worked at Deloitte coming out of undergrad and learned a lot there. And part of it was like how to lead conference calls and like wait for people to join and like kind of keep track on like, okay, who's joined? We're waiting for the partner didn't come, but we got the manager and the consultant. Okay. We'll get started here in a minute. And how to send out the agendas in advance and like, you know, let us know if there's anything you want to add there. And then you kind of run through and you take notes and, capture the action items with a person who's responsible for it and the date that it's due, and send an email afterwards with that list, so everybody knows what everybody's doing before the next meeting. It goes a long way to moving projects through.
It's amazing, because that you think in so many different ways. I was at a Vistage meeting once, and I was at a lot of them, but this one stood out. In fact, it's the only one that stood out. And even over the Jim Collins stuff, I love Jim Collins, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
but it was this guy, oh my gosh, I can't think of the name of the book that he wrote, but it was all being able to forecast based on global events. So what would happen in Mexico or whatever, because he was on Wall Street for a long time, but he noticed a pattern among events that happened, like just with the CIA and some of those things that would be going on. And it was one of the most fascinating experiences, because it's just like that. Well, some countries don't have internet, you know, and you're like, oh, in all of the tam sam sum, all of the market research, I had not thought the way this guy thought, like literally. And it was just like, and I was like, can I, and it's Mark Perot, I think it's spelled like parrot, but anyways, and he, as he talked about this, it was just fascinating to say, okay, well, this group is out of the basement. This group has a lot of terrorist activity. This group is starting. You think about Colombia right now and what its roots were 30, 40 years ago and what it is today, you know, and be able to take a market trend and go, wow, based on, you know, different types of cartel activity and just different things that are going on. And you kind of have summarized that. Now you're taking these groups and saying, this is what you need to understand how to do to be successful and to be out of your basement and to be moving on and to be a good entrepreneur eventually, because it's all similar patterns. I mean,
totally. Yeah. And I'm trying to teach them too,
when you said
how to develop the
18 months you're doing things.
Yeah. And I'm trying to teach them how to develop their entrepreneurial mindset, where they can think like an entrepreneur. You can be the fifth or the 25th employee at a growing company. It doesn't mean you have to be the next Zuckerberg, you know, in your basement or in your dorm room coding a bunch of stuff. No, just like, are you resourceful? Are you resilient? Can you wear a bunch of different hats? Are you, do you have a growth mindset? Like, it all comes out of growth mindset. Like, I can learn how to do anything if I try, you know, hard enough, and have the people above me, the mentors, whether they're real people one-on-one, or like I consider Zig Ziglar a mentor for me. I've never met the guy, he has passed away, but I've learned so much from his books and stories. And so just encouraging people to be thoughtful about their continuing education and development. Like, as salespeople, you know, I learned this one from Will Fuentes at the Maestro Group. You should be selling for 40 hours a week and you should be learning how to sell for an extra 20 hours a week. Like, what are you doing to hone your craft, to take courses, to, you know, read books, to go to seminars, to even just prepare for sales meetings, like to have, hey, what are the three main things I want to talk about in this meeting? You know, and to do that and to be prepared for all of the things on your calendar, not to just kind of show up and wing it. Like, I'm pretty good if I wing it, but, you know, again, I'm going back to Zig as the theme here. It's 60% planning to win, 30% preparing to win. And then there's the 10% where you show up for this podcast and I'm ready to win because I prepared for it, because I know what are the things I want to talk about. And it's amazing what you can accomplish when you put in that work on the front end, kind of what comes in on the back end. And I'll also bring this full circle as we're kind of wrapping things up. You give these valuable trust building gifts on the front end, it works itself out on the back end. You're going to make more money. People are going to do more business with you. They're, you know, they do want to extend the contract. They do, you know, want to buy the higher package office. They do want to refer you to a friend or another company because you added so much value on the front end. And you, when you start to think about, you know, hey, the math will work itself out. This isn't something that there's a quadratic equation, you know, it's karma.
It is.
You know,
absolutely.
You put enough good out into the world, you help enough other people, it's going to come back often in circuitous ways you didn't predict. So.
But I did notice one key thing with what you quoted with Zig, is it does take work. It's probably why one in eight should be in sales, because the reality is some of them are just like, well, it's just a paycheck, or I'm going to be able to. And that's why so many are not successful at it, because it is a craft that they have to go in and they have to constantly improve their craft, because humans are constantly evolving and changing. So it's like, well, you'll get all the time, you'll get people who say, well, I don't want to change. And it's like, well, then you're not going to win. And you're in the wrong industry. And I can't help you. I have a book that I've got a draft for that's called I Can't Help You. It is just, it is all about change management. And it is because we have to want to change, you know, and if we don't want to change, then you're not going to solve a need and a challenge anyways, even in your sales process, whether it's a company trying to get out of the revenue maze. We talk about companies that either are in their go-to-market phase or they're in their stay-in-market phase and resurrecting, right? And what do you do when you resurrect? So at the end of the day, there's a lot that we unpack with that. So anyway, I love what you're doing. I think it's amazing. Two things I want to ask you before we go.
Yeah.
One is, what is the best place that they could get a hold of you? Because I know people will want to get a hold of you.
Absolutely. Send me an email, mike@malloyindustries.com, M-A-L-L-O-Y industries.com. There, that is a reference to Tony Stark, Iron Man, Stark Industries, just so we're clear why we went with the Malloy Industries. You can go to our website to learn more, but send me an email. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter and stuff as well, but I would say email is the best way to get in touch.
Okay. And this is out of the blue, but you said Zig is a mentor of yours. What's your number one mentor?
That's a powerful question. My dad. There you go. For sure. I am the man I am today because of him. I've learned so much from him and his positive mental attitude. And if, something goes wrong, it's a temporary inconvenience. Do your homework. The test is easy. And even so far as they're not yelling at you. They're yelling at the person behind you, be a screen door. He was drafted in the Army, so he had a lot of people yelling at him. And it's just learning how to deal with anything that comes your way, whether physical, mental, financial, whatever. He's overcome it all. And just been an amazing mentor to help me. And now I get to pay it forward to, our chief cuteness officer as he grows up, hopefully learns a thing or two from his dad.
So we're going to end with chief cuteness officer and definitely thank everybody for listening and viewing and loving and liking. Share some love to Mike. He is definitely in your corner with those things. And thank you again, Mike, for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me and take care.
Thank you all for joining another great episode. Hats off to all you small businesses out there. I can't wait for the next episode.